You're listening to Careers and Cocktails, Career Talk with a Twist, hosted by expert recruiter Renee Fry. Let's get this party started.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Careers and Cocktails. I am overjoyed today because we are back in the studio. This is the first time we are recording in the studio since COVID. And Lori Creever is my honored guest. She is a killer author of this book that we're going to really dive deep into. But first, tell me the cocktail you picked.
I picked a Cape Cod with a splash of soda water as well.
Yes. So what that is, and what I brought today was 45th Parallel. Have you ever had this?
I'm about to.
It's local to Wisconsin. Their distillery is like 15 minutes away from here. I believe in New Richmond. It's a beautiful facility, and this is super smooth. So the recipe is my favorite, a menage a trois, which means three ingredients, super simple, 2 ounces of vodka, 3 ounces of cranberry, and then we're gonna splash with my favorite Topo Chico lime soda water. Okay, let's get this party started.
I'll open up this.
Sure. So we're gonna do 2 ounces of vodka.
Wonderful. I like too how the cranberry you purchased, it is cranberry cocktail, almost like a head start.
Exactly. All right. 2 ounces of that. Well, I'm glad I'm introducing you to something new with this vodka.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Shop local.
Exactly. And I didn't know they actually make some like ghost writers. There's ghost liquor producers. I had no idea.
Oh.
So some of their stuff is branded different brands. Yeah. Isn't that fascinating?
Oh, that's intriguing.
Yeah. I had no idea.
I did not know that either.
The things you learn from just some fun outings at the distillery. All right. Let's crack open this Topo Chico and we'll spritz some on there. I wonder if we should have a straw. We might have to swirl.
Yeah, we can swirl.
Oh, we can't forget the garnish.
Oh, yeah.
A lime to make it look so pretty. All right, Lori. My gosh, I can't believe we're cheersing in person. I've had to do this on Zoom.
Wow.
For 2 years. Cheers! Yum.
Oh, yeah, that's
that feels nice. Like summer, man. Oh,
already. Yeah, sure, you betcha. That is darn good. Darn good, Renee.
All right. So, Lori, give us your elevator pitch. Who are you?
I am a simple kid from Hugo, Minnesota.
I grew up in Forest Lake.
Oh, my gosh. You're a ranger. I'm a zephyr.
I'm a ranger.
Oh, wow. Well, I grew up on a lake, on a dirt road in the country. Always dreamed of running off to New York City. So my career's been a fusion of being very involved with the arts, music, theater, and television, but also practical business and organizational development and human development, human beings.
Yeah, and she wrote this incredible book, which tells you all about mentorship, being a mentee. And Lori, I'm a kindergartner. Tell me, what do you do for a living?
I help grown-ups who struggle when they encounter a person who's different than them, to really be able to be in a space with someone who's different, whether they have different ideas or a different skin color, or maybe they came from a different country, so that we can all get along better.
I love that. And I don't know if you know, but my mom is deaf, so I was raised, my first language was American Sign Language, but yet all these people growing up thought, are you from the East Coast? Are you from New York? Because I'm very direct in my communication, but it's because my mom is deaf. And that cult, that American Sign Language, that language is very direct.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
I love it. Every once in a while, I do encounter somebody who grew up in the Dakotas or Minnesota, Wisconsin, and it feels like you're talking to a New Yorker for the very reasons that you just said, Renee, because the person is direct.
Right. But then I have this accent. So when I travel, They're like, where are you from? I'm like, haha, because I'm totally have a Midwestern accent. So what are we celebrating with you this week?
I would say we are celebrating coming out of super cold weather. Also, I crossed the border from Minnesota to Wisconsin. I'd like to celebrate that as well.
Is it that far?
No, but it's just not something I indulge in often enough.
Oh, you got to get to Hudson more. We have the best restaurants. It is phenomenal here.
Everything. Bakeries, gift shops.
Yep.
Executive search firms. The best.
Yep. So cheers to you, girl. Now we're going on the party bus, Lori.
All right.
You've got to have good people if you've been an actress. So you can pick anyone. Who's coming with us?
Oh, wow. You know, the person that came to mind when you said party and bus, this might be dating myself, Phyllis Diller.
Oh my gosh, I haven't heard that name for years.
Wasn't she a blast?
Yeah.
She always had, like, you know, a feather boa or like a really fun 60s, 70s dress with like big feathery stuff and a big feathery hat.
She would be fun. And then I would want to bring Snoop Dogg. And I think the two of them together would be a blast.
I agree.
Okay, the book. Protégé Power is the title. Where did that come from?
Well, the word protégé is an old word, and it's related to the word that is protect. So a protégé typically has been someone that a mature, seasoned person would take under their wing and protect them and help to advance them in their career.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that we use protégé now might be protégé has a mentor, or sometimes you hear the word protégé with career sponsor, and either is valid.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also hear the word, of course, mentee, someone being mentored. But I used protégé power because of the alliteration.
I love it. I love it. And now, you were once an aspiring actress in New York City, one of my most favorite cities in the nation. And then you ended up working for 2 decades in international banking. How did you make that transition?
Well, there naturally is an informal mentor who's involved. So I was having a blast living in New York City. And I mean this in such a good way. I was leading, maybe we'd characterize it as a gypsy lifestyle. I honestly never had a job longer than 9 months. Because
wow.
I was always just kind of switching around and changing and restless and trying to make it in acting and things. So you don't take your job, your day job very seriously, but very interesting jobs. I worked on Wall Street. I worked for a Grammy Award winning jazz singer. I worked at the 3rd largest jingle recording studio in New York City. So I was always mixing with interesting people and celebrities and seeing how art is really put together and how much hard work it is. But then, sadly, I found myself getting a divorce, and I'm from, as we described, Minnesota originally.
Yeah.
And came back, and I had a young child, an infant, and a friend of mine took me to lunch. We had been waiting tables together while we were in college and always had stayed in touch. She was partway through her MBA, so clearly pretty different than me.
Mm-hmm.
Some real diversity there, right?
Yeah.
In our friendship.
Yeah.
And she was working in banking. At that time, Norwest Bank.
Oh my gosh.
I was a commercial banker. So we're sitting at lunch and she said, you know, you have got to get a real job. Like, you have got to just put your feet on the ground. You have a baby. You need to support your kid and have benefits and good hours and all of that. So I ended up applying at Norwest Bank. She was such a great mentor to me, helped me so much because it was hard for me to envision what I would be doing there. But I got hired in a communications role, communications marketing. And then, as you said, I was there for 20 years. And I really, my job there, I was always in international. I was the Department of Humanities. So I, unofficially, but anything to do with employee engagement, the workplace culture, innovation, inspiring and rewarding creativity, those sorts of things. And obviously mentoring, job shadowing, that was what they gave to me to work on. And it turned out to be so suited to my background in education because being in the arts, yes, you are a student of humans, of people, and noticing and really celebrating how different people are, and therefore in the workplace, their needs are different.
Right.
Right.
But how did they know that you could make that transition?
I think I had the really good fortune, Renee, throughout my time, honestly, in banking, of having really good managers. And I would say they had sufficient breadth and maturity in their experience to appreciate difference.
Mm-hmm.
And they had, of course, plenty of people that had majored in economics and finance
sure.
to do the important banking and credit functions. And so with me, I became, gosh, I mean this in a good way, like that catch-all drawer
okay.
or closet that you have at home, right? Where you're like, this doesn't really belong anywhere obvious. I'll just put it over here. So that became my job was, you know, give that to Creever. You know, you should call Lori. That's the kind of stuff that she works on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just things maybe that at first seem eclectic, out of the box, but we think it would work. We think it would really improve the culture here, the workplace, mm-hmm. or the customer experience in terms of how they see us, how they experience our brand, you know, again, with differentiation.
Yeah, you know what we call that here? Swiss Army knife.
Oh.
Swiss Army knife.
I am a Swiss Army knife. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Swiss Army knife. Okay, working in employee engagement, you saw hundreds of pairings operating in a coaching, mentor-mentee, job shadowing arrangement. What did you identify as the factors in someone achieving success in those arrangements?
Well, I was more or less running a dating service. I ran a mentor program, right? And so no romance involved. But I was a matchmaker, right? I had to, throughout the year, I would get to know everybody who could prospectively be a volunteer mentor. So when I would make the pairings, I was really trying to forecast, like, what would be good chemistry so that they would bond and mm-hmm. that mentee or protege would feel safe, you know, disclosing, like, this is what people have been telling me that I need to work on in my career. And it's scary, but will you help me? And what I observed was important was what I just modeled. That mentee going into the experience, the willingness to be vulnerable,
yeah,
to really deep disclose, declare to their mentor, this is what I know is, you know, derailing my career that mm-hmm. I need to work on. And I say to people, this might have been on your report card when you were in second grade and third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade. Might be something that your spouse has told you. Might be something that more than one manager or coworker has told you that you need to work on. And if you can go into a mentoring relationship willing to offer that, I think it's an honor to your mentor. And most are going to say, you know what? I can help you. Let's go.
Right. So are you psychic with these periods?
I did end up developing sort of a gut or intuition, mm-hmm. Spidey sense about this, right? And it was fun. And sometimes what I would do, and you could do this too if you are looking to find a mentor, maybe just start by breaking the ice with doing an informational interview. So let's mm-hmm. say that you attend a conference and you see one of the speakers is just, wow, that they're so good at things that I need to get better at in my career.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can find your way to them at the reception. If I'm assuming like if they're in your region or locality, gosh, could I have an informational interview mm-hmm. with you? I'm interested about your career path. Now, they don't know this, but your secret plan is you want to gauge, gosh, do we have chemistry? And maybe at the end of that conversation, if you feel that the two of you do, you could ask them, would they be willing to mentor you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. And that's advice that's in your book, too.
Yeah, I tell people that often what your sensibility is around who would be the best person to help you in your next phase of your career
mm-hmm.
is absolutely correct, is right. So trust that.
Yeah, exactly. And I know I've mentored numerous people and I've had numerous people mentor me. And there's been times where it's a phenomenal match and other times where I had to let, when I was the mentor, I had to end the relationship because the person, like you talk about a lot of this in your book about how you go about being mentored and the expectations. And this individual, I felt, just wanted to connect socially. And I was like, we have to keep moving your career forward. We have objectives. And then I had to cut ties. Anyway.
No, that is fantastic that you mentioned that, because I sometimes saw that as well. Or because I was in this role of being the matcher and running the program, somebody would call me up to say, I would like to get in the program, and they would name somebody very senior that they wanted as their mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And that made me think, okay, they're in this to try to ride on someone's coattails,
oh,
or just for better business social connections, those sorts of things.
Sure.
And you have just provided a great illustration of no mentor wants to spend their time on
mm-hmm.
that. You want someone who is going to work, be earnest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you give them 12 books to read this month, they come mm-hmm. back the next month to meet with you, and they've read the books.
Yep.
Right? That's what you want to see.
Oh,
and then
yeah.
that inspires you when
yeah.
you're the mentor to
yep.
figure out other bright ideas, which absolutely can include widening their network,
right.
making some positive introductions. But probably first and foremost, you want to see your mentee be someone who's going to put their shoulder to the wheel and work to develop themselves.
Exactly. So to our listeners who may have not been mentored, like, what I love about your book, and I use this for, I was like, oh my gosh, Lori, we are on the same wavelength. You say, get in the driver's seat. I always say that about your career as well. But there were times, so I worked at Target Corporation. I was there for 7 years, had a great career. But there were times when my leaders said, who was going to mentor me, right?
Yeah.
So how, as we're listening, how can we say, no, I'm going to select? How do people do that?
This maybe is in the category of a quote unquote difficult conversation, depending on who your manager is.
Yeah.
And how good your rapport is. But what my training is on a difficult conversation is that a difficult conversation is always an educational conversation. So if your manager is putting someone forward that, no, you don't see it, you're not that interested in
mm-hmm.
or certain what you could learn from them, politely ask your manager, tell me more about why you're selecting or proposing that as a match for me. And then, of course, I recommend deeply listen, right? And don't negate your manager right away, but be able, through your listening, to counter with how, you know, what I saw sometimes is a manager, similar to a parent, a mom or dad, had this very precise vision for their direct report of what they were going to do with them and where they were going to move them in their career next. But just like a kid sometimes, like, I don't want to take violin lessons.
Yeah.
I want to play soccer. That person being supervised would you think, that's not even where I want to move my career, right? So then you need to, with skill and diplomacy, describe to your manager, without negating their ideas, how you have a slightly different vision for yourself, and then maybe be able to, I always try to give a solution
mm-hmm.
to a boss, not just a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So be better if you express what you want and then say, for example, I think Renee would be an excellent mentor for me, and here's why. So lay out your case, and I think a reasonable manager would listen to that
yeah.
and want to work with you.
I would agree. That's great advice. But I want to make sure people aren't scared or shy away from those conversations, because those are the conversations that can really set you apart and get you in the driver's seat of your career, which everyone should be. Everyone should be. And I wasn't at times at Target. There were times where I moved where they told me to, and then I finally stood up one day and was like, no, I'm done doing what you wanted. Renee Fry wants this. But it took years, you know, at least 2 years for me to do that.
It can take a tremendous amount of courage. And just so people know, if you are someone who tends to get tongue-tied, or I used to always have my face would turn red or my palms would sweat, right? I think just know you're definitely not alone, because
mm-hmm.
Renee and Lori are, we're telling you, we've been through it. And also culturally, you know, at one point, the division I was in, we were in 38 different countries. This is in many cultures. People get trained this way. It's almost like you feel you might be disrespectful if you advocate for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully today we're contributing to the motion here of like,
yeah,
no, you're not. You should be the advocate for yourself.
Yeah,
You should.
Cheers to that, Lauren.
Cheers to that.
All right. What are some tips for success as someone being coached?
I would say be honorable to do, I mentioned it earlier, what you say you're going to do. Okay, so I'll give a quirky story on this, because if you're in a mentoring situation or a coaching situation, you've hired a coach, it's possible sometime they might give you an assignment that to you seems a bit harebrained, or what am I going to get out of this? It seems, you know, very strange. Give it a try, okay? So just open up the aperture, give it a try. Mm-hmm. I had a mentor one time that I was describing to him. I raised my son by myself. I was describing just some very challenging times I was having at home. Now, mind you, this wasn't the first or second meeting. This was like five meetings in. So my mentor knew and trusted that I was, you know, a smart, serious sure. professional. But I felt like it opened up because he had a son as well. And all of a sudden, he writes down the name of a book I had to read. And the book was technically a memoir, but very much written in the form of a novel.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was really strange. Okay, as a career development step, right? Compared to all the other things we were talking
about. Okay, what book was it?
The book is called This Boy's Life. And it was made into a movie, I think with young Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh.
And Robert De Niro is the stepdad. But it's this memoir of a boy, mostly while he's in middle school, and all the antics that he indulges in with his friends, right? So, honestly, I went to the library to get the book because I thought, well, I don't know if I'm going to love the book enough to purchase it and own it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just went to the local library and I made sure I had it read by the next time that we sat down. And so I still didn't get it, by the way. Slow learner. Still didn't get it. But I politely said to my mentor, oh, and by the way, I finished that book. And, well, it's an interesting book. Thanks mm-hmm. for that. And he didn't really say anything more. 3 months later, it's a true story.
Yeah.
3 months later, this light bulb goes off in my head. I think, I have not had a fight with my middle school age son for 3 months. Hang on. What's different? When did this start? And I thought, holy cow, it started when I finished that book. My mentor's a genius.
That's incredible.
Because guess what? I'm not a boy.
Right.
I've never been a middle school age boy. I was just always wanted to wring my son's neck. I was so impatient. Like, he breaks things. What's going on? He's, you know, not like all neat-nick. Like, and so then it was hilarious. I went to my mentor and I said, oh, man, I got to come clean. And I just straight out told him, I thought that was such a strange solution that you gave me.
Oh, my gosh.
But you're a genius because I see the design of this was to help me to get into the mind of a boy.
Right.
And see it from that angle. And how clever. So I just would hope
for... that's incredible.
I would hope for anyone that you would have a mentor who is that creative and that willing to just... You know, he didn't... There must be a name of this teaching method where... He was not explicit, right?
Mm-hmm.
The lessons were implicit.
Mm-hmm.
And then he allowed me the time to sort of let that grow until I figured it out.
What a great story. That brings up, though, with... Okay, so in mentee and mentor relationships, Lori, there's obviously a blurred line because some of us need support outside of the career. And, you know, he kind of saw that and helped you with that. How do you set that up for expectations if people, you know, need help with both, just their entire life, right?
Yeah. Well, I love that we set up earlier how it can be a virtue to be someone who is direct and explicit. So I would say most professional relationships, including that you would seek out with a mentor, wouldn't necessarily go too much into what's going on in your personal life. However, if that is what you seek, then I think it's okay to be explicit with that up front.
Sure.
Including establish some boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Because if someone thinks that they're signing on to mentor you on career development, and every single time you meet with them, it's something about your in-law or your dog's surgery or, you know, that's going to be tiresome. But certainly if it comes up every once in a while, I feel like, well, that's life. That's human, yeah. Right? And I think also people have fantastic options, that there are so many professional coaches and different flavors of coaches. And honestly, if someone feels like, I should maybe get a life coach, you know what? Maybe you should,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, why not?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that person is willing to do a little more 360,
sure.
listening and strategizing with you, right? I could probably use someone to help me clean out some closets for spring.
You know, we work all on can that, use right? help, right? Exactly. So let's shift now to the mentor. What suggestions do you have for people who are mentoring to help them do a great job for their mentee or protege?
All right. I'm going to take a sip.
Me too.
Here's what I would say. And this is a principle, a practice actually, that comes from improvisation. And that is, when you are the mentor and your mentee presents a dilemma,
mm-hmm.
restrain from blurting out the first thing that comes into your mind. That first thing that comes into your mind, allow yourself a pause to truly consider, is that the right thing for this mentee? Because most of us, what comes into our mind is us. Right? I mean, if you asked me something about living in New York, oh, the first thing that would come to my mind is all about me living in New York and how successful that was and all the places I lived or whatever. You know. But you're not me.
Right.
So I say pause and let the second idea, the second recommendation come to the surface. And hopefully that's giving you, this is all going to take place, of course, in probably a shortish amount of time. But that second idea, it's got to be selfless. It's got to be all about the mentee. If you have somebody who's a true introvert, but you're an extrovert, you're not going to succeed by advising them continuously to be you. In other words,
right.
to be an extrovert.
Right.
It's just not going to happen. And the reason I say it comes from an improv practice is, in improvisation, you know, you're given unexpected things all the time from your scene partners. And sometimes it's good to go with your gut right away, but mostly it's good to just let that second bright idea.
Oh, fascinating.
Bright idea come in. But don't make it all about you. Don't make it all about you, which yeah. is so hard, right? It is hard, especially if someone comes to you and is like, oh, Renee, would you be my mentor? And you're like, well, of course. And your secret thought is, who wouldn't want me for a mentor? Dude, to your good fortune, my calendar has the availability. So yes, it is very gratifying, but it's a job to make that person into a little bit or a lot better version of themselves.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So can you talk about the difference between a mentor and a career sponsor, Lori?
Absolutely. I will say I was disappointed. About 7 or 8 years ago, a very popular article came out, which was, you don't need a mentor, you need a sponsor.
What? Who wrote the article?
Thank you, exactly. I need to do a little research, and you know, it's blocked out of my mind for trauma, right? Because I was running a mentor program. Okay, so yes, it's a magnificent blessing to have a career sponsor. But here's the difference. A career sponsor is someone who is utterly, objectively influential, right? So in your industry and or in your company.
Mm-hmm.
This means they have spent years cultivating reputation, trust, and credibility. Therefore, someone that they're going to take under their wing momentarily to sponsor, to take some risk, an initiative to advance that person's career, needs to be a known quantity.
Mm-hmm.
So no one's going to sponsor you if they don't have pretty detailed knowledge and proof of your performance strengths
mm-hmm.
and your results. Also, a sponsor is a lot more momentary, like help you get onto that highly visible United Way fundraising committee, because it's really going to do a lot for your presence, for your brand, for your network, etc. Mm-hmm. Right? Whereas a mentor is someone who is going to be with you more for the long haul. You might have the same mentor informal that you work with on and off for years.
Right.
You know, someone that you could take out to coffee or just say, hey, you know, text them, could we set up a Zoom conversation? I'm at a crossroads and you know me so well, right? That's not really a sponsor. So while going back to that scenario I gave, you could practically ask someone who's a stranger to be your mentor. You could never ask someone who doesn't know you well to be your sponsor.
Right.
They can't. It's too great of a risk.
Right.
You've got to be a known quantity, right?
It's
like the stock market. You can't just look like you're too high risk of I don't know what this is. I've never been part of this industry, right?
Right. How about a career coach?
A career coach, like I mentioned earlier, there's such a great variety of coaches. I think a coach can be such an asset to you because probably it'll be somebody who's external to your company or organization. So they're not mired down in the politics and cast of characters that surround you every day. They are all about you.
Mm-hmm.
All about you. And the coaches that I know, they're always staying on top of just great techniques, great new tools, right? This is what they're really earnest about. Versus a mentor is likely going to be someone that you're asking them to share what is their accumulated life wisdom. Whereas the coach is someone who's always out educating themselves. How can they be the best person at developing others?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little different. I mean, if your mentor is also an outstanding, skillful, quote unquote, coach, that's great. But look at that anecdote I shared with my person who just is well-read and suggested a novel, right?
Right.
I mean, that's probably not taught in any coaching federation class.
Oh, right.
But, you know, it's just, he was just operating off of his good instincts,
mm-hmm.
and his instincts were really good. So that's probably why you're seeking a mentor, right? Their experience, and you're going to trust they have good instincts. And I know if I bring them different scenarios, they'll be able to help me think through it.
Yep. And I love that what you mentioned, someone external isn't part of the casting characters. And I always say you can see the forest, you can help them see the forest through the trees, right? Because when you're in a company and a culture, sometimes you get laser focused like I did at Target, you know?
Oh, totally. And if you have a mentor that works there as well, isn't it so easy if there's some workplace drama or trauma going on to use those mentoring meetings to talk that through? Or, you know, I was with my mentor, we were in the middle of a huge unexpected acquisition. And I don't feel like it derailed our relationship, but it definitely hindered it from time to time because he'd be gone. He'd have to travel. He'd be like, hang on, I need to take this call. You know, I almost felt like I needed to put in earbuds, right? Because I was like, I don't know if I'm supposed to hear this. But if I had an outside coach that I was paying to work with me, you know, it's not a favor that they're doing. They're really doing it from a very professional viewpoint. So I absolutely think there's time and place for each.
I agree. Now, who as a coach or guide has influenced you in your life and career, Lori?
Well, like I said, I had some amazing, amazing managers at Wells Fargo. First Norwest, then Wells Fargo. Mm-hmm. I think how I was influenced was, and I said this word earlier, maturity. Learning to pause, learning to seek out and hear all sides of an issue before you draw a conclusion. That's what I saw my mentors and coaches doing. And I remember one time, you know, just out of excitement, I declared something confidently to the person that was the head of HR. And I was meeting her for the first time. And I got a call from my boss because he had gotten a call from her. Hmm. This, whatever it was that I had said, did not land well with her.
Oh.
And it was something where she felt like I was bypassing her. Because all this great work I was doing in employee engagement, I was doing it as part of the marketing communications division. Mm-hmm. You know, you've been in a huge corporation.
Yeah.
Sometimes job descriptions are a bit eclectic.
Oh, patchwork. Yeah.
Well, I was not in HR. But however I phrased it, it seemed very threatening to HR and to her world. And sort of like I had a card, a trump card that I was just laying down and be like, oh, well, you know, I naturally didn't mean it that way.
Right.
But I was a little naive. And I thought this was so great. My boss said, now look, how you are is exactly how we need you to be. But you have created a little situation here, and I know it was inadvertent, and I have some ideas on how you can smooth it out. So let me tell you my ideas. Tell me what you think of it. Now, who couldn't be coached with something like
that?
Oh,
I love that. See, I've gotten the same call.
The same, hello, bull in a china shop. You're like, what, me? Something is broken?
What,
in
I my, said something in my that wake? Maybe you didn't like? Oh, yeah. But I love how your manager framed that up.
Yeah.
Now, let's go back, though. What I love, 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 and I'm the same. You want to hear all sides first?
Yeah.
How can we teach listeners to have restraint and active listen and see all sides, hear all sides first?
Well, it is a discipline, and it takes the M word, maturity. And this is what, now I presently work, and I love this work. It's an honor at a diversity, equity, and inclusion firm.
Yeah.
Intercultural
Super
Competence Edge.
Cool.
And one of the tactics that we teach, which I truly think is pretty easy for any of us to adopt, is when you encounter something that just super presses your buttons, right? And usually it's because I would never do that. What are they thinking? Or I would never say that. Mm-hmm. What is going on? Okay, that they might be really a bad player, okay? That's one interpretation. But now challenge yourself to come up with two other interpretations for that behavior.
Mm.
And the first one needs to be what we call a counter narrative. So in other words, challenge yourself to instead think of what might be a valid constructive reason for this behavior, email, action, you know, whatever it is that they did that you find yourself really getting riled over, right? Come up with a counter narrative and then figure out a third explanation as well. Just give yourself some options of like, what could be going on here? Just that right there can sort of calm you down, and then go back to, like I'm saying, it's kind of that difficult conversation credo of, it's always going to be a learning conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is the email I got from you, and I just need to understand more. What am I missing? Or, you know, because it seemed like this was what you're saying, or, you know, but it's patience. And don't you think, Renee, it's like patience with yourself as well.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Well, and I also think, like, open mind. You have to have an extreme open mind. But I love that counter, what was
counter
this?
Narrative.
Counter narrative. I love that, because that's something tangible that people can think about in those situations.
Yeah.
Because so often our emotions are triggered because of how we were raised, our current beliefs. And once you let it settle and you can get your thinking brain thinking, and then you can do the counter narrative. Love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
And your three explanations that you generate, they could all be wrong. It could be something completely else. But in the meantime, you've done yourself the service of greatly lowering your blood pressure.
Right.
Okay?
Love
so there's
that.
A virtue in that.
I love that. Cheers to that.
Cheers to that. Lowered blood pressure.
All right, Lori, you are a person of the arts, published poet, involved in competitive high school speech. one-act play festivals, perform with local comedy team, Jester's Comedy Improv. Tell us about the connection between arts and business.
I cross-train. I mean, I probably, when I started doing improvisation, I would have given it up if I didn't find it to be helpful. But funny, I found it to be very applicable to what I was doing in banking. And for some of the things that we're talking
about.
Really? Yeah, just really taking those imagination muscles to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
Learning to pause. There is a maxim that you apply in improv, which is to share focus. And that was pretty transformative for me because up until that point, as a, quote, leader and officially manager, I always had that definition of that the leader is out in front and visible, and sometimes you are, but also a great leadership skill is to hang back.
Yeah.
And let others mm-hmm. shine. Put this, you know, adjust the spotlight on them so that they can shine.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very useful. And similarly with high school speech, I judge a lot of high school speech seasonally.
Awesome!
And it always seems to help me. I guess it's like sort of like knitting for someone else, but I always seem to work out problems in other areas of my life through listening to the students and just experiencing what it is that they're presenting. Yeah.
So this is the multiple consecutive time that improv has come up. So I was trained in power talk to learn how to public. Well, first I started in Toastmasters, which you refer to in your book.
Love Toastmasters.
Because I was petrified of public speaking. And I was like, if I'm going to advance at Target, I need to know how to speak in front of a group. So I did Toastmasters. Loved it. They even invited me back to be like a guest speaker, which I'm like, okay, that's not my jam, but okay. And then I did power talk training where they're videoing you and you're doing all these crazy things. But I've asked people, how can I improve even greater in public speaking? And they say improv every time. So I'm going to have to look into it for sure.
Yeah.
But it scares the crap out of me because I feel like I can't act.
Well, improv instructors that I've had are amazing human beings, including they're amazing at creating a safe space for everyone. There's no mistakes in improv.
Mm.
So whatever comes out of someone's mouth, somebody else on the team picks that up and spins it into gold or something, right?
Fascinating. I'm going to have to check it out.
It's very worthwhile. And I think, too, it's a bit therapeutic. Sometimes strange things will happen.
Really?
And I would just say this out loud. I'll say, that might end up in an improv scene.
Oh, that's funny. I love that. I love that. All right, Lori, where do you get your inspiration from? Any books you recommend or podcasts that you're like, diehard listener of?
I have a range of things that I read. Sometimes I read mystery novels, again, just to change things up. But I would say I get a lot of inspiration. It might sound corny, but especially with what we've been going through with the pandemic and all, of truly thinking about some stories of people in my family that came before.
Oh, fascinating.
Right? Like how hard conditions were and how frightening to, for instance, you know, immigrate.
Yeah.
And not having electricity or running water or, you know, I just think back to that and I think, well, gosh, I have so many advantages just environmentally, right? With just flick a switch and magic, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I draw inspiration from that. And I do like to read, you know, sometimes history or biographies, things like that.
Cool, cool. And where can everyone find you, Lori?
Well, I am at Protege Power on Instagram and Facebook. And then our website is protegepower.com. And I've been doing some blogging and then talking with you and having a chance to talk to others. And the improv team I'm on, Jester's Comedy Improv, we perform in the Twin Cities at Torg Brewery.
You perform live?
We perform live in person. We were on Zoom for like a year plus, and now we're back in person. So Torg Brewery is in Spring Lake Park, and then also at the New Hope Cinema Grill, which is in New Hope. And it's super fun. And if you have never been to improv, it's a hoot. I mean, every show is different, obviously, because it's all based on audience suggestions.
Oh, really? That's what it's based... See, I've it's a whole new book for me, door for me to open with this whole improv business.
Might need to arrange like a date night or double date night or something where you come over.
Sounds
and
good.
See a show.
I'm there. Well, thank you so much for all of the value you have provided. This has been incredible. Check out her book, find her. And for all of you who need help with a career coach or writing your resume, go to payraiseandpromotion.com to learn about all of my services. And until next time, cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We are thrilled to have made a worldwide impact with listeners in 9 different countries. If you've enjoyed this conversation, please be sure to subscribe to Careers and Cocktails on YouTube and drop us a review on your favorite podcast app. If you're looking to update your resume or you're stuck in your career, I'm designated by LinkedIn as the top resume writer and career coach expert. I even created a resume and e-learning course to help you if you want to do your own resume. It's super simple and extremely affordable. Go to careersandcocktails.com to learn more. I also wrote a book called I Hate Mondays for all of you job seekers who hate your jobs and want to love your Mondays. You can go there for the same information. And of course, I am up to so much valuable information sharing that for you hiring leaders, if you want to find the secrets to finding the best talent, I have a hiring guide at careersandcocktails.com as well. I am here to share information and help people love what they do. Until next time, cheers.